This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Stress. We all know what that feels like. It can be like a gut punch. Makes it hard to breathe. You got muscle tension. Can't sleep at night. Headaches. Back pain. Doesn't have to be that way. Stress actually is not a thing. It is a response to a thing. And how you respond to stressful things can be a major factor in your happiness and in your health, your mental health and physical health. So let's talk about good stress and how to manage bad stress and turning stress into success. We hope to hear from our listeners today who have grappled with stress. How do you deal with it? What are some things here in San Antonio, activities we can all get involved with to help us find that baseline of no stress? Call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour by Donald McGarry. He is a psychologist, associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry at UT Health San Antonio. Donald, welcome to The Source.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Del Wright is with us, clinical psychologist and a member of the American Psychological Association's Stress in America team. Vail, welcome to The Source.
It's great to be here.
And Daniel Kirsch is the president of the American Institute of Stress. And Daniel, it's great to have you.
It's good to be here.
So Donald McGarry, is stress a... Do we really need to focus on stress? Is this really a big thing?
I think it is a big thing, and I think we don't really need to look any further than our own lives to know that it's a big thing, but we see a lot of chronic health problems that seem to be increasing in prevalence, and we're seeing a lot of research showing that problems like metabolic syndrome, chronic pain, other chronic health conditions seem to be growing, and if you look at the research that's an undercurrent kind of describing the source of all of that, stress is always a component. So it is a national health problem for sure. It's an individual life problem for sure. And learning better ways to manage it is probably one of the best things you can do for yourself.
Dale Wright, as we deal with stress in America, how are we, what kind of mistakes are we making?
It's interesting. From our survey, what we found is that Americans consistently report feeling stressed by money and work. But in our 2017 survey, more Americans, 63% in fact, reported that our nation's future was a significant source of stress, which is interesting because what we're seeing now is that it's not just these individual stressors that people are reporting, but really these nationwide or sort of shared community stressors. And where people get into trouble, I think, is when we focus on all these things that are outside of our control. And I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that people run into.
Daniel Kirsch, president of the American Institute of Stress, are you seeing people becoming more stressful?
I think people are less tolerant of other people, and that's stressful. But otherwise, stress is pretty much a constant for a long time. I mean, we like to point our finger at things, the state of the nation or somebody's personal condition. I think it was Dr. McCreary said, if we don't have control of things, that's the problem. And that is the problem. But stress is not necessarily something that happens to us. That's called a stressor, something that might bring us stress. But how we handle it is really up to us. And understanding it is very interesting. I like to quote a 1951 issue of the British Medical Journal that said, stress, in addition to being itself, was also the cause of itself and the result of itself. So everything provides a reaction to the body, and that's how we define stress.
Right, so it can be a vicious circle. As you experience stress, you can it can be a disruptor in your life, which can create more problems, which will stress you out. Daniel, right?
Yes, exactly. And so you need to be aware of these things. You need to think about them. I always suggest it's a good idea to pause and think about something before reacting. And, I have a few prescriptions for how people can handle these things better.
Yeah, we'll get into that throughout the hour. But taking a minute to just talk about an individual's level of stress, and if people can sort of self-diagnose to a point and try to maybe even moment throughout the day, try to gauge where am I, on the stress gauge, just like you are in your gas tank on your car, figuring out, okay, maybe I, you know, where am I on this? And so Donald McGeary, is that something that people should engage in?
I think it's a good idea. You know, if you think about what we check in with when we go to a primary care appointment, for example, they'll ask you questions about rating your pain if you have a pain problem. They'll ask you questions about checking your blood pressure and are you taking your medicine. But stress is such a broad, impactful problem that it's something that is not often asked about. But I think it is a good idea for us to think about it and for us to notice ourselves as we go throughout the day. And one of the difficulties of doing that is that stress is something, and I've seen this in my patients, I've seen this in my research program, stress is something that people can habituate to. So you can be so stressed out for so long that you just get used to it and you don't notice it anymore. So part of it is also knowing your own body. And sometimes we don't do a good job of noticing what our stress is, and we think the way we're feeling right now is not stressful, even though we tend to be experiencing a lot of physiological stress. And sometimes it's helpful to talk with a provider about, how do I notice when I'm stressed? What are some of the things that I look out for to know that I'm stressed out?
Phil Wright, why did y'all form the Stress in America team? Did y'all see this as a stress point that needed to be addressed?
So we've been doing our Stress in America survey for about 12 years. And it really was geared towards educating the public about stress and helping them think about what are these active things that they can do to manage their stress. What we've found is that over the last 12 years or so, stress levels have trended downward. They really were highest right in 2007 after the economic collapse, and they've sort of just trended down, and we think it actually has a lot to do with the theory from that we were just mentioning, which is habituation. But when you ask people what their level of stress is, and then you ask them what's a healthy level of stress, uniformly people report that their level of stress is higher than what they believe is healthy.
What I mean, I think about, you know, the true levels of stress when I'm totally really at a point, you're at a crisis point, and that's when you're dealing with existential threats to your life, you know, whether or not you're able to keep your job or whether your family is going to be able to stay in this country. Is there, and then are people blowing other things out of proportion to kind of get to that point? I mean, where is that stress coming from, Vail?
So we do ask people about where their stress is coming from, and really when you get down to it, it has to do with an intolerance of uncertainty. And part of what is challenging with uncertainty, whether it's uncertainty about the economy or healthcare or your own job or your family, it's that it interferes with our ability to plan. And again, it reminds us of all the things that are out of our control. And so when we are feeling that out of control, then it can be hard to take a step back and really pay attention to, you know, what are the changes I could be making? How could I feel more in control of my life right now, even though I know I can't control all these outside aspects?
But control is an illusion. None of us really actually have control. But having a positive outlook and thinking that that things will always work out to some point. Maybe that's something we can add to our lives to think, and we can draw on our own personal history to come up with a positive outlook that'll help us deal with stress. We'll talk more about that when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open, 210-614-8980. Do you feel more stressed out? How do you deal with stress? What's happening in San Antonio to help you deal with stress? Community, prayer, getting outside, having some healthy ways to relax. Talk about that. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. So many of our jobs have stressful aspects. You know, we have to reach quarterly goals. We have to present ideas to management. We have to meet deadlines. We're also always being trolled on by one person or another in our lives. How are we supposed to manage that stress? How do we maximize the impact of good, positive stress that's out there and mitigate the bad stress and turn stress into success? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. How do you do it? David has called in. And David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. Full disclosure, I'm the identical twin brother of Dr. Donald McGeary, who's on the panel. His constant overachieving has been an unending source of stress for me in my life. And I thought I would just share that first.
All right, we got that. Anything else?
Yeah, I have a question for the panel in general. Are there specific habits or specific things that we can adopt as habits in our life that can help us to decrease stress over time?
All right, David, thank you for that. Let's start off with your twin brother, Donald McGarry.
I didn't know he was going to call in. I think one thing to do is just, as we talked earlier, be able to recognize yourself. And not only, we've talked about your response, but it's also useful when I work with my patients or when I'm talking with people who are trying to manage stress long-term to be able to predict when you're going to go into a situation that you know is going to trigger stress for you. And then in that case, it's helpful to think about what are some different responses or different things that I do that will help me relax or decrease that stress somewhat. And there's no one-size-fits-all answer. I mean, there are things like exercise that are going to be better for most. There are some things like guided relaxation exercises or self-managed relaxation that will be good for most people, but everyone responds differently.
And well, so what about reframing the situation?
So
you're looking, I'm feeling excited, I have shortness of breath, I'm kind of like in an amped up, aroused situation. I may be stressed out, I may be nervous, or I may be super excited because this is totally awesome.
Yeah, you know, and that's actually a good point. Is that part of stress is that cognitive or that thinking part, right? It's our perspective, our perception. And when we talk about things that we can change and things we can do differently, changing the way you think or frame certain situations in your life can also help with stress. So that's a good point, David.
And Vale Wright, Stress in America team, what are some things people can do to manage their stress?
Well, similar to what we've been talking about, it's really about taking active steps to manage stress. So one of the things we really encourage people to do is to not isolate, to really engage in social connections, because we know that when we engage with others, it can be a real buffer to stress.
You mean like talk about it?
Absolutely. Or not even, sometimes it's not even about talking about it. It could be about going to a movie with somebody or just grabbing coffee. Not everybody has to be the one we talk to about stress, but we just know that when we engage with others, when we choose to not isolate, that's a really important way to reduce your stress.
But it really does help if you have someone that you can just talk to, just express yourself, you express the stress. Does that help, Daniel Kirsch?
Yes, absolutely. It helps. And that's why there's a profession called psychology, of which two of your panelists today are members. And that could be useful if you need that. I sometimes say, you know, before you try that, assuming that you're not at wit's end, then you might want to talk to a loved one or a friend. But absolutely, I completely agree with Vale that you can't isolate yourself. And likes on social media are pretty useless. They're more stressful than actually liking somebody in real life it's not helpful. It's not a substitute for reality. That's a big part of our stress, the demands placed on our time from social media. I don't partake myself, but I'm a big advocate of physiological treatments for stress. I came up in the biofeedback era. I have invented a device called AlphaStim, which is quite prevalent in San Antonio, actually. It's used extensively at the Army there and the VA, San Antonio National Military Medical Center. I used to work there when it was Brooke Army Medical Center. And so we do a lot with calming down the brain physiologically. But I think that some sort of physiological intervention as well as talk is essential. And the best one that's free and readily available at all times is breathing. Because we're talking about things that you can do, reframing your thoughts and this sort of thing is great. And you can do that fairly quick. But it takes a while to change your mindset. And so that's why you don't see a counselor or a psychologist one time, you know. And so breathing is something that you do throughout the day. And you can turn a breath into a therapeutic breath very easily. In fact, I publish a magazine, the American Institute of Stress publishes a magazine called Contentment. We actually published two. The other one's called Combat Stress. And they're free online at stress.org. The current issue of Contentment, or the previous issue of Contentment, was on breathing exercises. And we've done them before. And if I may, I'd like to teach one to your audience that takes 6 seconds to do.
All right.
And
I'm breathing right now. I'm ready.
All right. Well, this is a combination of progressive relaxation exercises, which I think Dr. McGreary referred to, and a breathing exercise. So it does quite a few things. To begin with, you have to identify your stressors, which we've been talking about as well. When I was in practice, I used to give people large orange stickers. No reason whatsoever that they were orange. I just grabbed one orange one and stuck with that for some reason. Anyway, I'd say put this on things to remind you that they stress you out. Like every time the phone rings, you jump, put one on the phone so you remember to do this. This procedure is called a quieting reflex, and it actually starts out as a quieting response, and then it can become a reflex. I'll explain that in a moment. But at the first sign of your stressor, when you start to have a stress reaction, when you start to have a startle response, when you start immediately to feel like something is happening that's not good, then you first smile inwardly with your eyes and mouth. What you're doing there is you're relaxing your face. You smile inwardly. If you smile outwardly, then you're tensing your muscles, so don't do that. Nobody even has to see you doing this. It's an internal thing. You could be talking to someone and they don't see you doing this. You just relax your forehead, you relax your jaw, smile inwardly with your eyes and mouth. And then you take one deep breath, and again, it doesn't have to be exaggerated, just the whole thing, as I said, takes about 6 seconds. But when you take in this breath, you visualize holes or pores opening in the bottom of your feet and warm air coming up your legs, filling up your lungs, and going back out. And you're done.
All right. Let me get another caller in on the conversation, and let's go to Nancy. And Nancy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. We're talking about stress.
Thank you for having this program. This is so vital to our quality of our lives. But I think it all starts with boundaries and knowing yourself and what's acceptable and what's unacceptable. And I went through a 2-year separation before it finally ended in divorce. And at the beginning of the separation, if I had just asked myself, is this what you wanted when you were a little girl and you dreamed about getting married? Is this the kind of behavior? I know right from wrong. I know what I want in my life and what I don't want in my life. But this isn't a realization that I came to until after I was divorced, because I found that talking with friends and family, all I got was just a bunch of nodding heads and sympathy and agreeing with my values and my position and my ideas of what marriage should be. And they're not trained professionals. They're just, they love you and they want to help, but they don't have any skills. And I was being an emotional vampire to them. And I lost friendships because of draining other people. And it didn't really help me. And I also was in counseling, as was my ex-husband. And
Capsulize what you were, where we're going with this, Nancy.
Well, I think that we need to put timelines on evaluating situations and decide how often we're going to review it and how much of our lives we're going to waste on any particular problem, regardless of who the person or the situation is.
Okay. Nancy, thank you so much for calling in. You bring up a great point. Donald McGeary, Nancy says, you can talk to your families and friends, but they're not trained therapists.
Yeah, and I think that goes a long way towards talking about what does it mean to get healthy social support. And sometimes, the social support that we get is not going to help us, and it can cause strain in relationship when you don't have really good ground rules for how you're going to talk about this. And the caller makes a really good point also about getting entrenched in these kinds of problems. And people will do this sometimes. They ruminate. That's one way people try to establish control over their stressors, is they think about them all the time.
That's worry.
It is. It is worry, and it's chronic worry, and it's also chronic stress. So I have to agree with her that being able to set ground rules and say, this is how far I'm going to go in terms of thinking about it, but then I'm going to do something. That's helpful. And then in terms of working with other people, just being able to communicate well. I think half of what we do about social support for stress management or the management of any chronic health problem is just good communication. How do you talk well? How do you get across what it is you need and make sure that the response you get back is going to be helpful?
Okay. And here's another caller, James. James, thanks for calling in and you're on the air.
Hi, thank you so much. I guess this kind of speaks to what Nancy was asking about I think a big problem with people who have mental illness or anxiety or whatever it is we're able to recognize that we need help, but also that the people around us, because we kind of flock to others who understand, have similar concerns. So I was wondering if you could speak to that kind of community anxiety level, engaging how it is that you reach out to others without overwhelming them with your own concerns.
Okay. James, thank you for that. Vale Wright at Stress in America team at the American Psychological Association. Any tips for James?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways that that people can find meaningful ways to get involved in their community. I think everyone's making really good points that sometimes we can overwhelm friends and families with our concerns. And if our stress is really interfering with our life in some significant way, such as making it hard to go to work or take care of our family or ourselves, then that's really probably is the time to seek out some professional help. But again, so having some balance, having somebody that you can go to with the more serious concerns, and then finding ways to get involved in your community, whether that's attending a church or another religious institution, maybe it's getting involved in volunteer organizations. So some way of giving back and contributing, we also know are important ways of managing stress.
Here's another caller. The number is 210-614-8980. Tristan is on the line. Tristan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Hi. I really wanted to bring up the point of meditation. I think it kind of goes into everything that you guys have been talking about here on the show today. I think that it's important for everybody to, and I would say on a daily basis, to really take some moment to just self-reflect, whether it's 20 minutes, whether it's an hour, however much time you have, really self-reflect and evaluate what you want to do and have some moment of inner peace inside your own mind. I think that it's very important, and it's still something that I think is not necessarily frowned upon. I think it's picking up in popularity. But for the most part, I don't think enough people really focus on their own minds and just being comfortable with silence in their own head. I think it would really help, you know, make decisions and evaluate, you know, what steps you need to take next, as well as a very big and valuable stress reliever to your daily life.
Tristan, thank you for calling in with that. Daniel Kirsch, in 1 minute, can you react?
I love it. Absolutely. Meditation is fantastic. Mindfulness. These are things that you can learn to do. And yoga, Tai Chi, I mean, this is different than just jogging or something that's a mindless exercise. These things involve your mind and your body, and by coordinating your mind and your body, you can really come to be in a fully relaxed state. You can also treat yourself to things like massage and whatever you enjoy to do for your body. So those things are very important. I think if you're really chronically stressed, there's little better than meditation.
All right.
A physiological response, like I was talking about.
Well, we're taking a break. We're going to come back, talk some more about stress, identifying the stressors in your life. What can you do to better deal with that? How to adopt healthy stress habits. The number to call in if you've got a question or comment, want to add to our conversation in any way, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about stress. We all have stress in our lives, and how we're going to deal with it is going to be a factor in how the quality of your life. If you're able to have a healthy response to stress, you don't, it doesn't knock you down, doesn't make you pick up the bottle and cigarettes and all these other crazy things, then you're more likely to live a life that be healthy and long and happy. And so we're just talking about, you know, how to deal with stress. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And Daniel is on the line. Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I think what you're doing is very important. If we all address stress, we won't have individual household divorces, problems, et cetera, national school shootings, whatever. However, having your show and all this different advice is probably stressing out a lot of people because everyone's so different and unique. So I can only tell you what works for me, and I've had an immense amount of stress. I won't go into all that because we all have it. However, I do want to say that the way I start my day is as I'm feeding animals outside, I look up to an open sky and I ask the higher power for personal strength. That's just me. Whatever your higher power is, if you have one, it doesn't matter. You need to give yourself a pat on the back in that sense and ask for strength and be humble. Secondly, I look at the man in the mirror and I accept what's fact and what's non-fact about what I'm able to do and what I'm able to control. And the reason I called is because I have never in my entire life, and I'm in my latter 50s, felt this immeasurable amount of stress from things coming from national, the White House and the world. And I've never felt so insecure and seen people hate on each other, never did before. And that really disturbs me because that is really something I as an individual cannot control. And some hate things that I don't need to go into all that. It's just a terrible thing. So those are the things that I do. I ask for strength from a higher power. I look at myself and accept the facts, my weaknesses and my strengths, and try to focus on my strengths and get through the day.
You know? All right, Daniel, thanks for bringing that to the table for us as we talk about this. So Donald McGarry, psychologist at the UT Health San Antonio, he's talking about having a morning ritual. And that can be very positive. It can be all sorts of things. But they say winning the first hour is the best way to win the entire day. And having a ritual that puts you in a proper positive mindset, I don't see anything wrong with that.
I think that's definitely true. And he also brings up a really good point about spirituality as a coping resource. It's not something that we research as much, but it's certainly something that people find helpful. It gives them a sense of their place in the world and gives them perspective. So I think that's a good point too. But going back to the point, David, about having a morning ritual, you're right. It is nice to start the day by setting the tone. And one of the things that I tell my patients is that stress is cumulative over time and that sleep is not a stress management strategy. Sleep is impacted by stress. Going to sleep doesn't necessarily make the long-term effects of stress go away. The problems that you went to bed with are there when you wake up in the morning. So having a ritual in the morning where you're able to step outside, look at the sky, get some perspective, and think about different options that are different things that help you cope, I think is a really good strategy because it does break that cycle of accumulative stress and gives you a good tone for the rest of the day.
Vail Wright, you mentioned earlier as we're talking about the level of stress in America. We got that from the caller from Daniel as well. He's talking about the national situation. People feel out of control, but people have control. They can turn off the TV. They don't have to be swimming in this all the time.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, what we found in our survey was that 59% of adults said that this is the lowest point in our nation's history that they can remember. And that actually spanned across generations. So everybody from older adults who lived through World War II to millennials and Gen Xers living through 9/11, everyone is feeling this national stressor. And so one of the recommendations we make to individuals is to put some boundaries around the information that you're taking in. Whether it's social media or whether it's the news, it's important to stay informed. We encourage people to stay informed. But for most of us, we don't need to know the breaking news at all times. We can get an hour of news over our lunch and then kind of let it go the rest of the day. And those are some of the ways that we encourage people to be active, to not be passive and just let all these stressors kind of overwhelm you, but instead make choices, make decisions about how much you're going to take in, when and where.
There are 24-hour news channels that understand how to keep people in that aroused state. They understand it quite well. And people, they actually get addicted to being in that state as they watch one particular channel. I hear that whenever there's a cable outage, those viewers call up the cable channel the loudest, and they sound like they are jonesing from the lack of an addictive substance avail, right? I mean, so that's a warning sign, right?
Yeah, actually, what we found in our survey is that while most adults, like 95%, said that they follow the news regularly, 56% said that doing so causes them stress. And another 72% percent believe that the media blows things out of proportion. So we know that news is causing us stress. We know that social media causes more stress, but we're just not doing a great job giving ourselves permission to step away and to stop, you know, scrolling through our feeds and listening to the eighth pundit say the same thing in a row. We just need to be better at saying no, not just for news, but for lots of things, to be honest.
Okay, another caller, 210-614-8980. We really want to hear how people in San Antonio can find some relief from stress. And Terry is on the line. Terry, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for this program. It's a great subject, very, very well needed to talk about. I get up, I meditate every morning, I pray all day long. I'm a teacher. I observe my students, and I'm just concerned about our culture with all the commercialism that's blasted at everybody. It just, like, crushed down our throats. I just think it's just gotten so out of hand. The values in our culture are so commercial, and it just puts pressure on everyone, and it's so empty, you know, for a lot of people. And I just think that's why they resort to the opioids and some of the horrible things that are happening. I just think there's just, because everything's too commercial.
All right, Terry, thank you for the call. Daniel Kirsch, president of the American Institute of Stress. I think about people who lived, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, even further back than that. I mean, I can't imagine that they were living stress-free lives, particularly in an age beyond before antibiotics and things. Any particular day, death was a constant visitor in their lives, all sorts of really serious threats to their existence. I mean, are we really living with more stress now than they did back then?
I don't think so. I work with the military, and they undergo so much stress that the average person couldn't possibly imagine it. And yet, most of them survive that. I mean, obviously, there's a huge problem with post-traumatic stress. But I always said a rich kid whose teddy bear rips could have just as much of a stress reaction. So as Daniel talked about, besides talking about morning ritual, he said everyone is different. He's going to talk about himself. Well, that's true. Classic example is someone is standing online at Six Flags waiting for a ride and just scared to death and having a terrible time, while somebody else is enjoying it so much in the anticipation of the ride that they're going to enjoy. So how we react to situations, how we perceive them, react physiologically as well as cognitively, and how it determines what this is going to do to us, what stress is going to do to us physiologically, mentally. So we are in control. We can. It's not something coming at us. It's something that we could modulate, and we can limit what it does to us.
Okay, another caller, Jeremiah. Jeremiah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, quick question / comment. I work pretty frequently, about 70, 80 hours a week, and every 10 or 12 days or so, I'll try to take a day where I'm not involved in social media and email and phone calls and just try to rest and relax. It's about 60% of the time it works, but the other 40%, I just find myself procrastinating or falling into a rut of, like, worrying about what I'm not getting done. So I guess my question is, are there some more disciplined pacing methods you can use to kind of give long-term stress-yielding results, false coping mechanisms to avoid? And I'll leave my question at that.
Okay, Jeremiah, thank you. He was talking about being burnt out, how to pace yourself, deal with so many of the nonstop workflow that we have. Donald McGeary.
Okay, I think Vail already spoke a little bit about setting boundaries on how you're interacting with news. And if you think about it, I would actually go back to the previous question you asked, David, about are we experiencing more stress now than we did in the past? And I think we probably are. And the reason why is just because you know, over time, the world is shrinking. We're confronting more problems than we've confronted in the past, and the penetration of that information is greater because of our use of social media and because of the availability of news and communication in general. So I think being able to set boundaries with that stuff is a good thing. Going to the question about how do you go about doing that and what's a healthy way of going about doing that, the only rule of thumb I can really give is that if you're doing something in service to avoidance or procrastination, then you probably shouldn't be doing it, just because we do know that those patterns tend to make stress problems worse, and that just directly confronting things, problem solving, or finding some other mechanism of managing that stuff is probably better.
Right. So when you procrastinate a deadline that you have to deal with, eventually you've got to deal with it, and it just gets worse and worse, yeah. And that just adds to your stress. So developing positive work habits is a great way to get your work done and avoid the stress. We're going to take another break. The phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Is there a connection between stress and anxiety and panic attacks? And what is all this doing to your nervous system? And what about past trauma? Is having distress and that past trauma, that could be a sign that you really have got to deal with some deeper issues. 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're talking about stress and how to de-stress and how you can deal with stress in a way that's good for your physical health and your mental health. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, and Elise is on the line. Elise, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. So I wanted to share, if you could touch on the health effects. For me, I've had stress manifest as tooth pain, interfering with the menstrual cycle. And I was actually going almost bald when I was 28 years old because of stress. So managing stress, it could actually hurt you with the heart attack or cancer. It could get a lot worse. So I was lucky that it was something that was a vain thing. But
so what are you doing to manage your stress?
Well, actually, I did start meditating a lot more, and that helped me so much. Another thing that you could do is being grateful and having more gratitude instead of stressing about what you don't have. Be happy about what you do have and say thank you for my car, even though maybe it's not a fancy car, but I have a car versus people that might have to walk to work.
All right.
Also saying no helps too. I mean, you don't have to help everyone all the time, so there's nothing left for you. You got to tell people no so you could take care of yourself, because if you're not well, you can't take care of anyone at all. So.
Fantastic, Elise. Thank you for calling in. Avail Wright, a clinical psychologist, member of the American Psychological Association's Stress in America team. Elise, and her points, they seem to be working for her. Is there a lot there?
There is a lot there. I think one of the interesting points was the way in which her stress manifests in physical ways. And actually, I think that happens a lot with individuals. That's where they maybe notice it first, is the physical response they're having to stress. And so it is important to have a lot of different coping skills in your back pocket so that you can employ them when you need to. I often make the analogy to a toolbox. If I have a hammer in my toolbox, that might be great for hanging a picture, but it's not going to screw my chair together. And coping skills are the same thing. If music is your go-to coping skill, that's great, but what happens when you lose your headphones and you need to do something else, like breathing, like meditation, like taking a walk? So it's really important that people have a lot of things in their toolbox so that they can cope effectively.
We hear about the brain gut connection and sometimes about the gut brain. So what is that, Donald McGarry?
Yeah, so there's this idea that how we're experiencing stress impacts us not only from the level of the gut and gastrointestinal problems and things like that, but also how our immune system functions, how our central nervous system functions. And what we found is that there is a really strong current of research connecting chronic stress with all kinds of health problems, including metabolic syndrome, which covers a number of different things, including cardiovascular disease, obesity, things like that. So we know those relationships are very strong. And we can also see this as evident in the treatments that we provide. A lot of the non-pharmacological interventions, or even some of the clinical and pharmacological interventions that we have for these various diseases, include some kind of stress management component. That's always going to be part of it, just because we do know that it's key to health.
I've heard about the vagus nerve. and that doesn't mean like when you get stressed out, you got to go to Vegas. It's just the nerve that kind of wraps around through your body and just goes straight through to many of the things that you will start to tense up when you feel stress.
And generally speaking, your central nervous system can actually become sensitized to all kinds of problems, including and especially something like pain. And we had a caller call in earlier, and I think the caller we just had talked about how pain can actually seem worse when you're in stress. That's actually true. Your brain and your central nervous system changes the way things like that are processed when you're experiencing stress.
So Daniel Kirst, talk us through how people can relax, get rid of stress, water.
I'm still stuck on the vagus nerve. That's my favorite nerve, actually, a 10th cranial nerve. I have a PhD in neurobiology. I'm a brain scientist. And I was a pain specialist before. Technically, I still am the 2008 Pain Educator of the Year, but I moved over to the mental health side more after 9/11. I was working with the military, and I saw this was going to be a long-term problem. So Elise said we should be thankful for what we have. And one of the things I like to tell people is that our brain is somewhat of a biological computer, and we can program it. And one of the best ways you can do that is to change some words out. And my favorite one is to change expectation to preference. And if you can do that, I mean, if you can really program your mind, just delete the term expectation completely and not get so frustrated and disappointed when things don't work exactly the way you want or life's not going the way you want. And, of course, we've discussed that. If it's not, there are things you can do about it. I mean, you know, if you don't like your boss, tell them. Or find another job.
You'll do them both at the same time.
tell them and find another job. Yeah. But, I mean, if we could stop being so disappointed in everything, and if we could stop and listen, I mean, this political discourse, well, if we would listen to each other, maybe we'd learn some things from each other, because both sides probably have valid points. And it's just the thing that scares me about the political discourse at the moment is the complete shutdown. I mean, conservatives don't want to hear liberals, liberals don't want to hear what conservatives have to say, and that's not the way to get anything done.
Okay.
We all are Americans. We're all living here together. We need to work together.
All right. Here's Sarah's on the line. Sarah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you for your show. And I wanted to address geriatric stress. I'm 67 years old, and when should we resort to taking the SRIs, the serotonin reuptake inhibitors?
Okay, Sarah, thank you for that. And so Donald McGarry, you're a psychologist at UT Health San Antonio. Help me understand that SMART question.
Sure. So and there are two parts of that SMART question that both deserve attention. The first is the unique problem of geriatric stress. And this is a part of our population that as we get into what's colloquially described as the graying of America, where the population of older adults in the United States is growing significantly, we do need to think about the specific components of stress in older adulthood and how to go about managing that. Right now, I'm not aware of anything that suggests that we would do things differently than we do in middle adulthood, but I think that's something that's going to get more attention. The second question is, when do you resort to medications? And she brought up SSRIs or selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors as a medication that might be given. And how do you know when that's a good time? One rule of thumb I have with the patients that I work with is that it's much better if the control for your stress management comes from within you. So it's not stored in a pill bottle. It's something that you can actually do yourself, just because that's something you always have with you. There's no known side effects of self-management for stress. You can deploy it whenever you like. It challenges you to be a better manager of your own life. Whereas medications, you start to have this locus of control or a sense that the medication is responsible for you feeling better, not you. And that means that you're only as good as your medication supply.
Vale Wright, help me understand if there's a connection between stress, anxiety, and things like clinical depression and even suicide.
Yeah, sure. So again, as we've been talking about, stress in and of itself isn't a bad thing. It's really just your body's response to adverse or demanding circumstances. It's when it becomes chronic, it's when you get no relief from it, that's when we start seeing these really significant mental and physical health problems. And that includes, like you mentioned, anxiety and depression, and some of the other things we've talked about, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, obesity, insomnia. So again, that's why it's really important that people are educated about stress, that they can recognize when their stress is getting out of control, and that then they take active steps to manage it.
And doing that, dealing with stress before it becomes a cancer, then they can, this is what you got to deal with. We got to figure out how we can help ourselves and others become more stress, stress literate.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a big goal for our Stress in America survey. We often have a lot of resources on our website. It's apia.org that talk about how to manage stress. And I think one of the things that we haven't really talked about is at the foundation is really this level of self-care. It's the things your caretakers probably told you to do. Eat healthy, get some exercise, get some sleep. Those aren't going to solve your problems, but what they're going to do is they're going to give you that foundation so that when you start to get more stressed, that you can fall back on the healthy habits you've already done, and then you are better able to both cope and figure out how to solve your problems.
Everyone has got a history. We bring all this luggage with us, the past trauma that we've had in life. That becomes part of dealing with stress as well, doesn't it, Vale?
Well, certainly. Individuals who have experienced traumas, and again, that's unfortunately a lot of individuals have experienced trauma. And if it's not dealt with properly, then that could make you more susceptible to stressors and to feeling like you're less able to manage your stress than for somebody who maybe hasn't had those same experiences.
And so we have to be sympathetic when we talk to other people who may not be able to having trouble dealing with that stress. We don't understand what they've been through. Donald McCary, how do we help them there?
So in working with people with trauma backgrounds, it can be very difficult. Right now, it helps to know that there are accepted treatments that are available for individuals who want to deal with trauma. And so being aware of what the resources are around you is one way to go about doing it. And the other is just to recognize that communication, and I mentioned this before, is important. Being able to talk to people about what they need, how can I go about helping you? Don't hesitate to ask those questions if you want to help someone who's experienced trauma in the past or is dealing with a lot of stress now.
And real quickly, in about 20 seconds, Daniel Kirsch, is forgiveness a part of dealing with stress?
Absolutely, yes, I guess so, especially in the Bible Belt. We need to forgive ourselves, and I would like to point out that stress is not a disease. Anxiety is a disease. Don't medicate stress. I think SSRIs and those sort of drugs are terrible and do more harm than good. And so
when they're prescribed by a doctor in a clinical situation, you know, and this is a narrow focus, but overall, most people, let's just live with our stress. Well, don't beat stress. Let stress lead to success. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.